Hello, and welcome to
Killing It
on Broadway. I'm Jennifer Simard.
And I'm Jessica Vosk, and this is the podcast where we discuss all things guts, gore, murder, and mayhem.
It's not safe for work. Hi, Jessica.
Hi, Jennifer.
And hello, Sally Wilford.
Well, hello, Jennifer and Jessica.
Oh, my. That was quite a greeting.
Wasn't it?
I enjoyed it.
Sally, my BFF, I love you. I'm so glad you're here.
Forever and ever. I'm so glad I'm here too. Me too.
Well, I am also glad. Well, and I look, this is BFF time for all of you killers out there. You know, we are having our BFFs on the podcast to discuss some sassy crimes, and it's very nice to have both of you BFFs together here. Your love is strong. And, you know, we want to tell these tales with our best gal pals who happen to be Broadway divas in their own right. And before we decide to begin today's story, for those of you who don't know it, guess what we have? Merch. We have a lot of merch, which is available at our website at killingitonbroadway.com. And for as little as $5, which is less than a Starbucks Silly Willy Frappuccini, you can get all of our bonus holiday episodes on our Patreon page, y'all. That's a little bit of, you know, we needed to tell you the deal, okay? Just in case you didn't know, now you know. But let's get back to today. We have a very holiday, sassaloony celebration. It's a holiday for us here because it's another, drumroll please, BFF day.
That's right. Sally Magoo McGua, my BFF. Every huge life event that one can go through, we've basically gone through together. Am I right?
Yes.
Wow.
Yes.
Yeah.
Tell us.
Oh my gosh.
Oh my God.
Weddings, hospitals.
Divorce. Yeah. Hospitals, death.
Yeah. Okay. Well, marriage, like, well, you know,
too much wine, hangovers. Yes.
Yeah, genius. All of it. Now, professionally, y'all, Sally has been in Assassins on Broadway, along with many other shows, both on Broadway and beyond. She was an original cast member of William Finn's Make Me a Song. She's a cabaret and concert star, singer of choice, by the way, for many composers. And she just released an incredible CD on PS Classics with our late friend Rebecca Luker entitled All the Girls. It's a celebration of friendship like today. And Sally and Rebecca, we're also best friends. So please do yourself a favor and download or get this CD. You won't be sorry. So Sally, even though, as I've just laid out, you are this incredible actress and songstress extraordinaire, the thing about our show is we don't want to talk about it at all.
Thank God. Okay, oh. Good.
Okay.
Good. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yep. That's the reaction that's what we like. I don't know. I can't explain it. I don't know that we can explain it to civilians. What a relief it is to not talk about the business, right?
Well, yeah. What a relief it is.
It is. Yes. It is a relief. And it's also sort of like, I'd say the bedrock of our friendship is that we talk about the business, but it's not the priority. It's never the priority. We at the end of conversations, like, oh, I forgot to ask you, how's everything going in that regard? Because there's just too much ground to cover in real life. And it's much more interesting.
Oh, amen.
Right?
Amen to that. Yeah. So, Sally, we do like to ask our guests, number one, why are you interested in true crime, if indeed you are? Number two, like the Green Lantern, like, do you have an origin story or something that you want to tell us about how you got into true crime? TV shows that might have started your interest? And then number three, or letter C, why do you think septuple threats like the three of us are so into it? So can you get all those in your head? Go.
Oh my gosh. I know. Isn't it interesting? I think the origin of why I became interested in true crimes and also just murder, and whether it's murder or missing people or death or whatever. I grew up in a little town in Ohio called New Richmond, and I lived at the end of this very, very private lane. I had one neighbor that was, maybe a mile away. But on the way down to our house, there were two graveyards. And so we used to play in the graveyards at night because our neighbors had three girls. We had three girls. And we just thought it was screamy fun. And we'd climb trees and we'd make up stories about the dead people. And I think I just became sort of fascinated by looking at gravestones and wondering of who these people were. And as I got older, I just loved movies that were about crimes and watching them. And I think then as television evolved with crime stories, I just became obsessed with investigation discovery, but even before then. And I found it fascinating that all of the ads are driven towards women on those shows. If you've ever noticed all of the advertising, it's all for women. And so I think women are, I think, particularly interested because maybe we're, in essence, are we afraid of getting attacked or killed or someone abducting us? I don't know. Or what to do if something like that happens. I don't know. I just know you can literally, if you turn on my television now, it's probably on Investigation Discovery. Because
I love that. I love it. And again, you're right. The hair ads, the lady, the razor ads. I wonder. I also happen to think that women are the smarter of.
And then I was going to say, then getting to the triple threats there, I think that we're just smart. And I find these stories, I think that some of them are, I think we're smarter. I think we're diabolical. we could probably figure out how to do a lot of these things.
We are the CIA if probed.
We are. Yes, we are. Yes. And we can remember many things, not only triple threats in our business, but we're, quadruple threats in life because we do. Septuple.
Yes. Don't undersell yourself.
No. Never undersell. We are multitaskers, let's just say.
Detail-oriented.
Mm-hmm. Detail-orientated. Mm-hmm. And I have said to several exes, hello, all of you, that I always say, guys, why is it that I can do 6 things at one time, but you can't unload the dishwasher? So I do think that women, I agree with Sally, women... Two thumbs way up. Speaking of Sally being on our show and what we are informing Sally of, one of our informational tokens here is that you now have the title of Dr. Wilford, Dr. W or Dr. Dubs. And that's for the remainder of this episode. So that's what this is. And you can choose your respective field. So let me just confirm with you, Dr. Dubs, you are originally from Ohio.
I am originally from Ohio.
It's fantastic. Mm-hmm. I love Ohio. This is excellent. And killers, we haven't covered that many female perpetrators on our show because we've had a lot of male serial killers. Mm-hmm. We've had a lot of men who have done the things that are not so great. So we've only done 4 female cases. And we wanted to thank you, Dr. Dubs, for joining us today to discuss yet another very healthy, makes great choices woman, sounds together. And we're so glad that you're here to discuss this with us. And we'd love to give credit where credit is due first. So our boyfriend, Wikipedia, is always our first and foremost as far as our credit and Murderpedia, as well as Mara Bovson of the NewYorkDailyNews.com. So this is one of the oldest serial killer cases in America and the oldest in Ohio. And it's a lady, everyone. It is a lady.
Whoa, whoa, whoa.
She's a lady.
I needed you to finish it. I needed someone to finish it. I'm so glad the both of you did. This is the case of Martha Wise, the Borgia of America. Thank you for playing. Now, first, like us, you might be wondering why Borgia? Well, our protagonist, Martha Wise, earned her nom de plume after Lucrezia Borgia, one of the famed House of Borgia in the 15th and 16th centuries. Now, Lucrezia was a feisty Italian, which I know nothing about, obviously, and said with my Italian emoji hands, thank you so much, Apple, for finally putting that on our text messaging system. And she was rumored to be a notorious poisoner. However, recent historians have started to look at her in a more sympathetic light as being a victim of her family's deception. So please keep that in your mind today as we tell our tale. Dr. Simard?
I'm going to take it. So Martha Wise was born in 1884 to Sophie Hazel and her husband. Both were farmers in Hardscrabble, a town in Medina County, Ohio. Sally, is it Medina or Medina?
I think it's Medina.
Medina, you say Medina, I say Medina.
Yeah, because it's Medina, Ohio. Yep.
Mm-hmm. I was going to look it up, but then I was like, I'm going to ask the local. All right. Mm-hmm. So there were farmers in this Hardscrabble, Medina County. Now, three brothers and a sister were also born to the family, although contemporary sources name only one, a brother named Fred. Oh, hi, Fred Vosk.
Oh, my God. Oh. What a doll.
Now, in 1906, Martha Hazel met the substantially older Albert Wise at a box social, which, according to Mara Bovson of the New York Daily News, was, quote, a quaint tradition in which young ladies demonstrate their culinary talents for potential beaux. Martha's chicken sandwiches were impressive enough to make Albert Wise overlook her sunken eyes and advanced age. He came according and soon proposed, end quote. Isn't that nice, you guys?
You know, I want someone to say that about me on my dating profile. I don't know about you, but I want nothing else than like, she made a great chicken sandy and, you know, somehow she needed some filler in her lower eye area, but never got it. But I still love her despite the non-Botox. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's nice. So these two were married, though Albert neglected to give her a wedding ring, which to me is kind of like the vaccines, right? Pfizer is a, right? Pfizer's a it's a Tiffany 2-carat. Moderna is a family heirloom. Johnson & Johnson, a gemstone. And AstraZeneca's, it's good enough. Like he gave her the, it's good enough.
You know, it's a cubic zirconia.
You know I mean? Asked you. Isn't that good enough? I asked you.
Or this. Anyway. Do you want this? That's how I hope it goes for me. Wake up. You want this?
Wake up.
Now, the marriage, surprise, surprise, was not happy.
What?
I know. Stay tuned. So Martha moved on to Albert's 50-acre farm, but quickly discovered that he expected a farmhand more than a wife.
Goodbye, city life. Goodbye.
I know. And life was no less poor as a married woman than it had been when she lived with her parents. Okay, even when pregnant, she was forced to do farm work. I don't know why I find this so funny, because I'm picturing her with like a harness or something. Like, even when she's pregnant, she's forced to do farm work.
She's generally male-oriented, such as, here we go, plowing fields and slopping hogs.
That's a no for me.
Slopping. I would be slapping, not slopping.
Did you ever do that in Ohio? Did you ever have to do anything?
No, but my grandmothers did though. They absolutely did. They were hardworking plowing women. Yes.
Jesus. Yes. Okay. So this is all on top of the usual household chores that, you know, women do. She had to bake and she had to clean in between plowing and slopping. So the couple's first child, Albert, did not survive infancy.
Yeah. Wonder why.
I know.
I'm sorry. I just, now all I can see is like, well, I'm up again, honey. I'm going to do some plowing and I'm going to take care of the hogs. Let me throw the harness on and with the bricks and, you know.
Yeah. And then give birth.
Yeah. And then something feels weird. Yeah. Oh, like, oy. No.
Well, poor Albert, he did not survive. And four others, however, did. They were named Everett, Gertrude, Kenneth, and Lester. Now, Martha's main source of diversion during this period was funerals. She seldom missed a visit to any funeral held in or near the town, whether she knew the deceased or not. And when questioned, she simply said that she liked funerals. Hey, Sally and I like cemeteries. This doesn't sound too weird to me.
No. I was just going to actually make the comment that I feel like back in the day, this could be you, Jen.
Yeah.
Like,
well,
like just, but in a better way. You're not, I mean, this is, I'm just saying like, you'd be like, you know what? Somebody named Tim suffered something awful. I got to go check it out.
I mean, it is very much like me, except I've been voted like people's most beautiful woman of the year twice. So that's where the story sort of
I completely agree with that. I completely agree with that. My parallelo here is that you love a cemetery situation. So if you lived back in this time, it could have been you that was like, it's Monday at 12. What? Not the dentist. The funeral. I gotta go.
Oh yeah.
And
Sally, if you told me the story about the cemetery years ago, which you probably did, because I remember the tree, playing. Mm-hmm. I don't remember that. And I love a cemetery. So we gotta go walking in. We gotta go to one and just walk around and
totally. Yes.
It's really my favorite thing.
Me too.
Have you guys ever been to the one in Queens, the big famous one? Because I've never done that. Can we go?
Yes. It's a date.
All right. Getting back to our story now. We all feel for Martha, of course. Now, Albert Wise, her husband, you guys, he dies suddenly in 1923. There's no cause of death offered here. I leave it to you to speculate. But he, because of his death, this leaves his wife, now 40 years old, a widow with four children. Again, according to Mara Boveson of the New York Daily News, her, quote, behavior took a turn for the worse. Her nocturnal wanderings ranged far from the farm, and she would show up at neighbors' homes, wide-eyed and foaming at the mouth. Some said she would bark like a dog, quote.
No.
So that is, I would consider that a turn for the worse, if true. Now, her fixation on funerals did become more noticeable after his death, and she began not only attending funerals, but openly crying and lamenting at them, no matter who had died. Now, within a year of Albert's death, Martha, though not considered a particularly good or attractive catch, oh my God, we get it. I'm just reading
Golly.
It.
Like this. And let me, she's ugly, okay? Ugly.
God.
Here's the thing. I looked at pictures. We're obviously going to post pictures of her. And I'm like, y'all, it's fine. She's fine. They're making it sound like she lives in a bell tower. I mean, just give the woman a break.
I'm never self-taping again. I'm out. I'm good. I don't need the problem.
Beauty's in the eye of the beholder. She might be gorgeous to someone, but she's hardly this.
Well, she was good. Her chicken
monster.
And her looks were good enough for Albert.
Right.
I'll tell you
and
that.
Like, that's a crime. It sounds like it's a crime that she was born with that face. Like,
I mean, well, I'm just saying, let's just say that women have been objectified for the ages.
Yes.
Can you agree?
Yes.
God bless her.
Yes.
Jesus, leave her alone. Anyway.
I'm rooting for Martha right now.
Just, you guys, despite all the odds, she did find a new male companion in the form of a man named Walter Johns, who worked as a farmhand on the property adjacent to her farm, which is kind of sexy. Like, she comes up with her harness. She's like, you need some help slopping those pigs.
Yeah.
I'm looking at her right now. I had to do a quick Google search. Yeah. I'm looking at her right now. Listen, they were simple times. And so I'm just going to say, like, she looks a little angry. She looks like she's been through some shit. But I'm not looking at her and going like, oh, the ogre who lives in Shrek's castle on a Saturday night. I must agree. This is too much. It's too much about ladies, how she
but
looks.
Then enter Mr. Johns.
Yes, sorry. Well, let's back to the story. So he's a sexy hot farmhand who works on the farm next door. Now, their relationship was frowned upon by Martha's family, and both her mother, Sophie, and her aunt, Lily, made no secret of their desire for Martha to end the relationship. Now, this is Sophie Hazel and Lily Jink is her name.
And they were like, no, girl, no. And so they did not approve. And by the end of 1924, after a lot of pressure from the home front,
Martha finally acquiesced and the relationship ended, even though she apparently loved him a lot. And, you know, Walter Johns moved. He moved to Cleveland and the couple lost contact. Now, if this were Criminal Minds, they'd probably say right now, well, there's your trigger right there. My favorite line from that show all the time. That's your trigger.
Right. There it is.
So,
the question that I love that people ask most is, who hurt you? Who hurt you? What happened to you?
Killing It on Broadway is proud to support A-Step, artists striving to end poverty. This organization was started by our friend Mary Mitchell Campbell, musical director of Broadway and beyond, who also wrote our theme song,
As we all know, the arts are in a challenging time right now in the U.S., and A-Step has been doing innovative things during this pandemic, including feeding thousands of families, as well as bringing the arts to children. If you are able, please go to astep.org to make a contribution to the Arts Resilience Fund so they can keep killing it by bringing smiles to the faces of children everywhere.
That's astep.org. Thanks, killers.
And so this is a pretty traumatic event, I would have to say. So ding, 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 ding. Now, remember our friend Lucretia Borgia, Outright Notorious? mm-hmm. or victim of her family. So on Thanksgiving evening of 1924, several members of the family, including Sophie Hassel, fell ill with a severe stomach ailment. Now, the others recovered shortly, but her mother's illness worsened, and she died on December 13th of 1924. Now, New Year's Eve of 1925 brought even more illness. So Martha's uncle, Fred Jink, his wife, Lily, and several of their children all began suffering stomach pains similar to those Sophie Hassel had experienced before her death. Several family members were hospitalized, and Lily and Fred were both dead by February of 1925. So in total, 17 relatives were taken ill with similar symptoms in the fall and winter of 24-25, and four of the Jink children were left partially paralyzed from the mysterious illness. And after the deaths of the Jinks, authorities began to investigate this cluster of deaths, and the county sheriff, Fred Roshan, soon discovered that Martha Wise had signed at a local drugstore for a series of purchases of large quantities of arsenic.
Dun, 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 dun.
Oh, you know, sounds totally normal. So there's an autopsy done on Lily Jink, which confirmed the presence of arsenic in her digestive tract. And brought in for questioning by the sheriff, Martha at first claimed that she had obtained the arsenic to kill rats, but eventually confessed that she had used it to be a fly on the wall of when something starts out, which I love when they're like, I bought it for the rat. Honestly, lots of rats. And that's why I bought it. And then a couple of hours later, they're like, fine, I poisoned everyone. So she says this. Now she's confessed that she's put water in buckets and then puts the arsenic in the water in the buckets and the coffee pots that the family drank out of. And her actual words were, quote, oh, God, yes, I did it. The devil told me to, end quote. So despite her confession, Martha pleaded not guilty to the charge of murdering Lily Jink in front of a grand jury on March 23rd, 1925. She told the grand jury that she was irresistibly attracted to attending funerals and that when there were not enough funerals in the community, she was driven to create them by killing people. So naturally, Martha Wise was indicted on a charge of first degree murder on April 7th of 1925.
Let's pause there. Sally, this sounds like this need for the funeral. This is some sort of emotional release for her. So as twisted as this is, I logically can see why if there aren't enough funerals to satisfy her need, she would create them. Oh my goodness. It just sort of occurred to me when she said that. What do you think about that?
Well, I think that, you know, they took away, her guy moved away. She had nothing to fill this void in her life. And funerals clearly gave her some sort of an emotional fulfillment. So she thought, this is easy. They pissed me off and I can get fulfilled emotionally by creating some more funerals. It's completely logical to me.
I agree. And apparently, Fred Roshan, the county sheriff's wife, was in this interrogation. So, Jessica, there is more detail, actually, about what drove Martha to confess.
Obsessed.
Yeah, it was raining. So, killers, here you go. We have to give full props to this reporter that we've mentioned before. Her name is Mara Boveson. She writes for the New York Daily News. You can find this at murderpedia.org. Here we go, because these ladies can't wait to hear the deets. So, Medina County Sheriff Fred Roshan brought Wise in for questioning. Ethel Roshan, the sheriff's wife, also was present and would play an important role in the interrogation. Now, Wise held out for hours, insisting that she knew nothing, that the arsenic had been purchased to kill rats. We've already covered that. I'm skipping ahead. So she might have continued to deny everything had it not started to rain. Hearing the raindrops, Ethel Roshan took a new tack. Quote, listen, Martha, the sheriff's wife murmured. Quote, the rain, it is the voice of God. It says, you did, you did, you did, end quote. And it took just a few moments of listening to the raindrops for Wise to break down, or to break Wise down. She shrieked. Then came the confession that we just mentioned to you. Oh, God, yes, I did. Oh, God, yes, I did it. Wow. The devil told me to.
Let's just know that when you were telling that story, I'd like to know if you can guess the song that came into my mind as the song that happens in the Lifetime movie during this scene when it starts to rain and she's like, those are the teardrops of God, honey. Oh, Sally, do you have any guesses?
And I think it's going to rain today.
God, what a good song that is too.
Hold me. Okay, keep on. No, not it.
The one I have in my head is, listen to the rhythm of the falling rain, telling me just what a fool I've been. Because,
yes. It's so interesting though, like the God is what triggered her to confess. So that makes me also, yes. But it also makes me go dot, dot, dot to the funerals because they're in a church typically. So it was religious and there was God there in a funeral situation. So maybe she didn't think this was evil. Maybe she thought this truly was something driven that she was doing for the better good somehow.
Well, yeah, no one thinks they're the villain of their own story, right? And that is a great, and that's a great way to, that's the great way to justify it in your mind. But to your conversation earlier, ladies, I think Ethel was good cop.
Yep, absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
But smart cop. Smart cop.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Let's go on to Martha's trial. So Martha's trial for murder began on May 4th, 1925. She was represented by Joseph Pritchard and prosecuted by Joseph Seymour. Don't you love those names? They're so old fashioned, right? And elegant, yeah. Right? Joseph Pritchard and Joseph Seymour.
Oh, yeah.
Pritchard. Joseph Pritchard and prosecuted by Joseph Seymour. Defense claims included that Martha Wise was criminally insane and that she was ordered to commit the murders by her former lover, Walter Johns. A number of setbacks plagued the defense, including the May 6th suicide of Martha's sister-in-law, Edith Hazel, and the subsequent collapse of her husband, Fred Hazel, both of whom had been prepared to testify for the defense. The recantation of testimony, isn't that suspicious? Now, the recantation of testimony by a man named Frank Metzger, who told the prosecution on cross-examination that the defense had asked him to perjure himself to support claims that Martha was insane, and Martha's choice to take the stand on her own behalf. Family members, including Martha's son, Lester, which I can't imagine having to testify against your own mom, but he did, and three of the Jinks children all testified against her. After 1 hour of jury deliberation, Martha Wise was found guilty of first-degree murder. The jury urged mercy in sentencing, and the judge sentenced her to a life sentence in prison, under the terms of which she could only be freed by executive clemency. One hour.
Mercy.
Yeah, you did it.
Mercy. Yeah.
Well. There are a couple of cases where the children have had to testify against mom, and I truly can't imagine, especially when mom is sitting at the defense table. And you have to sort of understand what that feels. I can't even imagine what that feels like. I cannot empathize. But speaking of Martha, God bless.
You want to say something, Sally?
Oh, Sally, just, please.
What about the lover? Whatever happened? Did he come back in the picture? Did he ever, the boyfriend? No?
I don't think so.
Oh,
no.
Wow. I just was curious if they called on him. You know what I mean? Like if he's...
I'm not 100% sure, but I'm 99% sure no. They just kind of used him... as a scapegoat, like he set her up to it, you know, but.
Can you imagine them saying to him like, hey, you know, can we talk to you about Martha? And he's like, I don't know her. I'm so sorry. I've never. Oh, just like the actual, like what ghosting was in the early 1900s. So I was like, I moved, you guys. I'm confused. I don't know. But here we are. And we're in 1962 now. And Martha was pretty well behaved. So a result of her good behavior in prison, the Ohio governor, Michael DeSalle, commuted Wise's sentence to second-degree murder, and she was actually paroled at the age of 79. Now, Wise's remaining family refused to take her in. I know. How could they? I know. Sally looks particularly shocked at this time. And a number of rest homes for the elderly, they declined her residency as well because... Hello.
Wow.
I mean,
she's going to get some of that rat food and bring it into the home.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, what is going to happen? She's deciding like at a bingo game to be like, y'all guess what? I don't know why she's Southern. I don't. You guys, I don't know why she's Southern for me. I'm saying like, hey, y'all, you know, y'all, I made some fish tacos. I made some bouillabaisse. I want you to try it. It's the first time I've made it. So I can't imagine anybody at bingo or otherwise would say, I want a bowl of that. I love that. You seem to be such a good cook. So nobody would take, nobody.
Despite your sunken eyes, you right. can cook.
I truly, you know, that scowl on your face and the chicken that you made, that chicken sandwich that we heard about all those years ago, but you look kind of worse for wear, but we're still going to try your soup because you seem to be a real good cook. So truly nobody would take her in, and that, you know, family, rest home, rest stops, etc., funeral home, and nobody would take her in. So she returns to prison. She returns to prison because she has nowhere else to go. Can you imagine? Sorry.
No.
Like,
but at least she got, you know, she got three square meals. She got, like, some recreation time.
Nobody wants to be my friend. Got to go back to prison. What? Oh, no. Wow. So, yeah, yeah. Her parole and the commutation of her sentence were revoked because nobody was going to help her. So she died in prison on June 28th of 1971. And Martha Wise was actually featured in a 1930 Toledo News Bee article series profiling, quote, women who are paying the price for folly, women who gambled against society and lost. The 1962 issue of the St. Joseph Gazette called the Wise case, quote, one of Ohio's most publicized crimes of the era. And she has been labeled the, quote, poison widow of hardscrabble. Wow. And a, quote, poison fiend. And Wise's case was also covered in a 2008 episode of Sally Investigation Discoveries.
Okay.
Series.
There
Deadly
she is.
Women. Oh. And I guess Deadly Women, Hanny. And I guess I want to know, Sally, when did you first, because this is such a huge case in Ohio, because this is such a, you know, widely publicized, although it happened so long ago, when did you first hear about it?
You know, honestly, I think I saw it on Investigation Discovery. I remembered sort of the basic details of how they you know, dramatized it on for television. And then when I was reading more about her, then I was like, oh, yeah. So it had to have been, I think it's been a while, maybe like 4 or 5 years ago. I feel like that I watched it on Deadly Women.
You must have.
Now, she's the poison widow of hardscrabble. Did she invent Scrabble, like the board game Scrabble?
Scrabble or think? Scrabble?
Scrabble.
Like
poison. Several mm-hmm. points for that mm-hmm. word. I wonder. Mm-hmm. That's stupid. Well, I'm going to cut that out. But hard Scrabble. Hard Scrabble. That's a hard funny Scrabble. Name, hard Scrabble.
It says BB and not PP?
It says BB.
Huh.
Mm-hmm. And it is weird.
That's so weird.
Because I am the poison widow of soft Scrabble. I mean, honestly.
All right. Well, see, now I like where this is gone, and I'm gonna keep it in.
Okay. See, because I would say Scrabble. I know Scrabble well, but you know, I would say for Ohio,
now,
it's gonna be like
fried, Scrabble.
It'd be more Getta in Ohio than it would be Scrabble. Mm-hmm. But
have we had Scrabble?
Oh yes.
Do you like Scrabble?
Not particularly, but I do force myself to try it if I'm in that vicinity of where it's originated. But more in Ohio, it's more Getta, which is a little different than Scrabble because it's made with cornmeal. So
I don't even know what it is. I would actually love to know what it is.
Scrabble or Getta?
Both of them.
Scrabble is like any bits of meat left from pork. I believe it's pork. Yes. Pork. And it's ground up, and it could be parts of the brain. It could be parts of the liver. It could be all of it, right? Just the look on your face says it all. It's just like any sort of filter, any sort of filter meat left over. It's delightful. And then it's ground up, and it's made into sort of this loaf, and it usually has some sort of filler with it. And then you slice it up, sometimes fry it. And then sometimes you can put syrup on it.
I'm upset.
Sometimes you go with syrup on it. In Ohio, you do a little different because they make fried mush, but then they do fried mush with pork innards, whatever's left. And that's made into Getta. And then it's fried.
I mean, it sounds really good.
Don't waste anything. It's called never waste anything.
You know what? I get it. Never and waste. When I toured in Ohio for a little bit, and I remember the...
You went to the Getta bar? You went to the Scrabble bar?
Yeah, definitely. Me, I was like, take me to the Getta bar after a two-show day.
I want some brains and some neck.
Yeah.
We're going to get that.
I'm like, totally. Anything to grow a little hair on my chest. No, but anyway, when I was in Ohio, the food I remember being like a thing was the pasta with the chili.
Yeah. Three way, four way. Sure.
Yeah.
Skyline. Yeah.
Skyline. This is why I love talking to people who live there.
See, yeah. I mean, and Skyline is basically you got your spaghetti and then spaghetti. A form of chili, but it's very kind of watery. And then you put Colby shredded cheese on top. And that's a three-way. If you add onions, that's a four-way. And a five-way is usually with kidney beans or something.
Now, let's make it sexual. No.
But when I first started dating my husband, Scott Johnson, I promptly gave him keys to my apartment because that seemed like the right thing to do. And I was out of show. I'm down doing a show. And I had you can buy the Skyline chili by the can. And I had some in the cupboard. And he called me and he's like, and he's from California. So chili to him is like, you know,
Hearty.
You know, Mexican chili with the real meat and yeah. And he called, he goes, what in the hell is this chili now?
Well, you know, I didn't try it, but I saw lots of pictures of it and I probably would try it.
Yeah. Like, I think it's delicious.
Yeah. I would absolutely try it if you throw any pasta in front of me, I'm going to eat it. I am. Okay. That was a side note. I'm sorry, Jen.
No, don't be sorry. It's a fun topic, but we should wrap this up here on BFF Day. I just want to say,
no,
I know, but I just want to say at large, everyone, if you want to know who someone is, look at who their best friend is. So that means that I'm pretty amazing. I'm just going to say.
No, I'm amazing because of you.
Love ya. We had a great talk with Marissa Rosen last week, Jessica's best friend. And I think we all have would you guys agree? Sometimes you have a couple of best friends, right? Like,
absolutely.
Because you've described Caitlin Kinnunen as one of your besties and et cetera. But like, I have a very small inner circle and Sally is my chosen family, my chosen sister. Yep. And I love you. Sang at my wedding, bridesmaid at my wedding. Come on.
You know it.
But that's nice though. You know what? The smaller the circle, in my opinion, it makes me feel better and safer. And
absolutely.
And, you know, that's that, especially in our weird, wacky business of entertainment where everything is shit anyway. We, you know, it's nice to know that you have your ride or dies, which is
true. Yeah. It's true. Okay. And we have like literally a core. There's a core group. And Jen and I mean, we've known each other for since what year? You're the timekeeper.
93.
But we had dinner, you know, we've done lots of holiday dinners together with our core girls. And yeah, we've just, you know, like, what do you do when they become your family? You're a family.
That's it. Mm-hmm. It's the only way.
Well, Sally, we're going to let you go. And on that note, I love you. Thank you for being here.
I love you. Thanks.
I'm glad the two of you met.
Me too.
On my note, I also love you by proxy. And I'm so happy that I got to like actually sit here on a Zoom screen. I wish it was in person, but I'm so happy we got to chat.
Me too, soon. Jessica. Soon. I know, because you have so many girlfriends that I adore. And so henceforth.
Yeah. Yes.
I love you too. You're my family, my sister. There.
Bye, baby.
Bye. Love you.
Bye.
Oh, Jessica, I feel like our relationship has become more intimate, meeting our each other's people.
But hasn't
persons.
It? I think that's right. Yeah. I think that's actually quite right. And again, I say small groups of friends make me a happy camper. I love a small little circle of trust. I do.
And like you have concentric rings, right? Because there's people you adore and you hang out, but then maybe they're not your ride or dies, right? Like the people who know where the bodies are buried, right?
Sure.
to coin a phrase.
True.
Yeah. And so we each have that. And I'm sure our listeners have that, you know?
Absolutely. Honestly, go kiss your best friend. Not like virtually though, because of the cocoa, but you know, give him a virtual kiss. Give him a pat on the back. Say like, thank you for being friend. And don't involve arsenic, don't involve, you know, raindrops, don't involve Satan, but just give them the love, because it's rare that you find someone or a small group of people in your lifetime who you can truly trust. So to that end, go give them some love. go show them some love, because in addition to us loving our friends, we also love you, killers. We do. We love you. We can't hide it. We're excited. We love to say it every single time. You know how much you mean to us. So thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you from the bottom of our hearts for listening. And until next time, keep killing it.
Don't kill anyone.
Killers, as we mentioned, go to our Patreon page and join us to get exclusive bonus content, merch, and follow us on Instagram at Killing It On Broadway and Twitter at Killing It On B-Way.
Subscribe to us for free wherever you download your podcasts.
And go ahead and give us a 5-star rating and lovely review. It'll be good for you.
Killing It On Broadway is a production of Killing It On Broadway, LLC.
Music by Mary Mitchell Campbell. Orchestrations, Benedict Braxton Smith.
Edited and engineered by Smokey.
Morale officers, Fred and Nelson. Say goodbye, Fred.
Say goodbye, Nelson.
Oh, I love that he looks at me every time. I'm like, say goodbye, Fred. He's like, sorry, what?
What? What do I do?